Yo, what's going on? It's your boy, Big Wavy Roy Johnson here.
Hello everyone, this is the Interview Queen, Alicia Too.
This is the infamous Cameron Solis.
This is the professional Nathan Crew.
This is Veggie.
This is the Callahan Death Machine in the draw, and the face of Impact Wrestling, Sammy Callahan.
The one and only shot with Thunder Willie Mack.
This is Shreddy Breck, a.k.a. Mr. Clangin' and Bangin'.
And you're listening to...
You are listening to...
Broken But Glorious.
Broken But Glorious.
Broken But Glorious.
Hello and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by wrestler and musician Sleazy E. How you doing this evening?
Yo, 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 my brother. It's the S-L-E-E-Z to the Y to the E. It's Sleazy E coming from you here in Arkansas, man. I appreciate you having me on here and glad we linked up, my brother.
Yeah, I've been really quite excited about this for a couple of weeks. So.
Oh, man, well, I appreciate it.
How's the lockdown situation in Arkansas then?
Man, oddly enough, out of all the 50 or 52 states I think we have, I'm not sure, but we're one of five that has no actual lockdown. It's like, well, you know, a lot of people's going to lose their jobs and stuff, so we might as well have everybody out there. And I really don't know. I don't know much about all that good stuff, but all I know is that Arkansas is about as slow as it gets on everything. So we'll get everything last, and it'll come straight up our asses, and we'll have to taste it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in my fourth week of lockdown.
So fourth week, does that mean like you could go to a grocery store or...
We're allowed out for an hour a day.
1 hour. Yeah. Is that like 1 hour for everybody or just yourself?
And yeah, you can't go to shop with anybody. You have to go by yourself. You can't take the kids to the shop with you.
Man. Well, that's actually a lot better. People are here... Half of the people seem like they're partying in the grocery store. Half of them seem like they're in a horror film. So it's really just not a good feeling going out to the market here.
Yeah, some of the shops, it's like only like five people in at once. So it's like a 40-minute queue outside.
It's balls to the wall here compared to that.
Yeah, so what we'll do, because you're here to promote your music as well as your wrestling. So if we play your song, ECW song, What Happened to You, and then we'll get on to discussing your wrestling.
All right, that sounds great, man.
ECW, what happened to you? One day it was barely legal, one day it was through. Three letters changed my life. I remember staying up all night. Bloodshed and tears were shown. I had a smile and a bone. In a big old hole down in Philly, yeah, brother, that was a city. On the corner of Ritter Swanson, strange things, what they wanted. It all started in the NWA. Called it Eastern back in the day. But that sure didn't last too long when Gordon brought old Paulie along. Franchise for down the world title. Some might as well have been a Bible. Then came their first pay-per-view. Let me tell you, boy, it was cool. Barely Legal was the name. I'm telling you, shit was insane. ECW shot off the moon. Ride was wild and it flew. Magazines and merchandise, we all gladly paid the price. I remember watching fan cams. Made me high, made me feel like a man. ECW, what happened to you? One day it was hardcore heaven, one day it was through. Three letters changed my life. I remember staying up all night. Blood shed, tears were shown. Had a smile and a bone. but it was the beginning of the end. But we kept watching as if it was fine. But if you watched closely, brother, you had to see the sign. Cause Vinnie Mac is on the dough. ECW, their funds were low, but they kept doing all they know, boy. They kept running, running shows, running shows, running shows. On a cold January night, down in Arkansas, it was time for ECW to fall. Vinnie Mac tried to capitalize on the three letters that changed their lives, but nothing will be the same as ECW back in the day. What happened to you? One day it was hardcore TV, one day it was three letters changed my life. I remember staying up all night as blood was shed and tits were shown. I had a smile and a bone.
Alright, so that was an ECW song, What Happened to You? So I'm guessing you were a big ECW fan growing up then. So.
Oh, man. Well, I was more of a fan of the style than I was of ECW, because growing up in Arkansas, we didn't have a lot of ECW up until it got on TNN. So, but when I got to see it, I always loved the hardcore style and hardcore and this and that. And then one of those days, I found Deathmatch and just ECW. It spoke to me as a young man and inspired that song.
Cool. So who were some of your favorite wrestlers growing up then?
Growing up in well, it could sound cheesy, but my name is Sleazy, so I guess it's all right. I would personally, Stone Cold Steve Austin was my big guy, you know, because it's basically like he was a father figure through what you guys call, you know, the telly. So he raised me via television. So Stone Cold, I'm just forever indebted to that man. So that's number one right there, if I had to say one of them.
Yeah. What about on the extreme hardcore side of things?
Oh, man. You know, everybody likes Cactus Jack and Sabu, RVD, all those guys. Just guys that... Caution to the Wind is cool to an extent, but then, like, some of the guys take the caution to the wind that's unimaginable, and those are the guys that just, I feel, embody that. I think a lot of people can have hardcore matches and go out of their way, but like to continue doing that day in and day out just to give people that type of feeling. Those are wildcats.
Yeah, definitely. So what prompted you to don the tights and get into the ring?
Oh, man. Well, like I said, I was a huge wrestling fan growing up. I never really liked sports, and I didn't play sports. I wasn't coordinated, and I wasn't really a cool kid. I was poor, so like, what else am I gonna do? I'm gonna watch professional wrestling. So I found wrestling 4 or 5 years old. Just you know the old story. 4 or 5, you see wrestling, and then I think around the age of 8 or 9, I went to my first local independent show around here in Arkansas, and I was like, holy crap, like people actually do this around here. That isn't, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock and all these guys. Like, whoa, there's more to it than that. And, you know, funny as it seems, everybody has to figure out that it's a work at some point. They figure out that it's a work and it ruins everything for them. They can't enjoy it or whatever. It takes them a while to bounce back from that. Whenever I was young, I figured out it was a work, and that was the best news in the world to me, because I was like, okay, I get it. Now I'm trying to understand every single little thing about it that I can. Then I found these local wrestling shows, and you know, I was a kid, so there wasn't much I could do at that point. But I started, I stole my grandma's camera at some point. And, you know, Jackass was coming out and all that stuff. So, long story longer, I found a camera and started filming a little bit of footage around the time I started to go to these local shows. And so I couldn't wrestle just yet. You know, there's a lot of stories about guys training before they're 18 and this and that. And,
yeah,
man, good for them. I just, they, nobody would train me before I was 18. So I just ran the camera for years and years, and around that I was 17, 18, whenever I could get in the ring and bump and actually start learning some things. And that's basically how it all started. And then it was 10 years of announcing, refereeing, running a camera before I even had my first match. So that's the...
Oh, wow.
That's a long, very long story short, even though it's a long story.
So it was like Stone Cold... The guy you wanted to kind of mold your style around when you started wrestling or start training?
Oh, really? I love the spirit of Stone Cold, and I use a couple of his moves just because he inspires me a lot more in certain areas. Whenever I first started, my gear was the black trunks, black shoes, black knee pads, all that stuff. You know, Stone Cold it out, and I'd use a slingshot and a little forearm off the second rope, but truthfully, the guys that inspired me the most was the hardcore guys, because I got into that, and then, you know, I couldn't train for a long time, and so these stunt videos was my outlet to get that out of my body. Oddly enough, you know, being young and having the urge to feel pain isn't normal, so I tried to channel it as much as I could, and so those hardcore guys inspired a lot of these homegrown stunts type things. You know, there's a lot of things that mirror each other, like with the light bulbs and thumbtacks. Like,
yeah,
a lot of the stunt groups would use those. A lot of deathmatch stuff used them. So I was inspired by the hardcore guys because I could actually grab a hold of that style. And I know, like, you know what? I'm still not good at a lot of stuff in the ring, but whenever I was young, I learned, well, I can jump off of something high through a table or a board or this or that. So I done that for the longest time. And so those guys inspired me hard through the stunt years of being a teenager and all that stuff. But I'm inspired by all styles. I grew up in Arkansas. Memphis wrestling is the number one thing. Do you know much about the Memphis style or Memphis history or anything like that?
Only the bits I've seen of USWA.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Yeah, it's a different type of style, and, you know, they're kind of more towards a hardcore style, too, believe it or not. There's a lot of the TV matches that are just good old classic matches, but in Memphis, they always had a hardcore brawl style, and I think that inspires basically anyone that comes out of the Mid-South.
Cool. I'll come back on to hardcore wrestling in a bit. So tell us back to your first match. What do you remember about it in hindsight? What's your opinion on it? So.
My first match, oddly enough, was maybe about a year and a half ago. Maybe between a year and a half, 2 years ago. And my first match. I've been to hundreds of wrestling shows, done all kinds of stuff, you know. But then I trained, and I was totally ready. But my first match was just nothing but nerves, pal.
Nothing but
nerves. And luckily, I was able to work with a guy that I was already an established referee around the time he came in. So he came in, and he's a much bigger man than me. So he came in, you're not going to just watch some giant man referee, because it just doesn't make any sense. But he paid his dues, and he moved on, and he started working. And he was he's just a really good dude. His name is Cataclysm. And if I had to describe him, he's like a 6 foot, 220-pound guys. It's a mix between Kane and the Spider-Man character Venom. So so he's just this big menacing character around here, and I have always just been a nasty, nasty bastard, you know, just running my mouth, cowardy. So it made for a good match, but man, I was nothing but nerves, and We had it good. And the coolest part was the guy who brought me into the wrestling business, Deadly Dale. He was one of my main trainers. He brought me in because he finally got me to do video work here around
yes,
here.
Yes.
He was able to manage me during the match. So he brought me out. I came out and I was trying to look as cool and as tough as I possibly can, you know. And he brought me out, and the match was it wasn't that fast of a match, but I'll tell you what, my heart was racing 100 miles. After the first bump I took, I was blew up because straight from my nerves. But we made it through it, man, and it's something I'll never forget. The first match was, first cut is the deepest, first match is the sweetest. I'm not the sweetest, but it was great. Neither one of us got hurt. It was all good. And then funniest part about it, listen, man, I'm an emotional character. Like, I just, I'm really happy or really sad or really mad. I guess some people could call that maybe an emotional disorder. I don't know. But I was so happy and overwhelmed after my match. Got back there and saw Deadly Dale and Cataclysm, and just they were like, oh, man, was you okay? You okay? And I just broke down, man. Just started bawling my eyes out in the corner. And they're like, it's okay. I just cried my eyes out. And they had a little, you know, we always have our meetings at the beginning and the end of the show. And the booker was like, you know, they put me over and was like, Sleazy finally had his first match after 10 years of training. But always remember, there's one rule. There's no crying in wrestling. And I'm like, shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
that's the first match memory right there.
Cool. So where did the Sleazy character come from?
Actually, a buddy of mine that passed away, Austin, he got me... He was in my stunt group, our stunt group. He taught me how to lift weights, got me in shape and all that stuff. And we were just thick as thieves in our group. And he, oddly enough, we was young. And nobody even called me Sleazy for years after this, but he was... One day he was like, instead of Easy, they call you Sleazy. And I'm like, man, I never even had a nickname before that. You know, like, my initials are ED, so I don't got much to work with.
Oh,
and so he called me Sleazy. And then a few years later, somehow it caught on around my friend group again. And I picked it up, and I had no idea what I was like, what a name I would have in wrestling. And I refereed for a while. And then I got a chance to announce, and they were like, well, what's your gimmick? Are you going to use a name? And I said, yeah, Sleazy. Boom, and that was it. Because before that, that was my rap name, quote-unquote, even though I never recorded anything, just a bunch of guys sitting around stoned out of their minds freestyling. You know, that was our rap group. And then so Sleazy was given to me by a good friend of mine, and I've just used it ever since.
So you have an in-ring segment, like... Show.
Yeah. I done a Sleazy Speakeasy. I tried to do that a couple of times, and I thought, man, that would be the coolest thing, you know, have my own little part and always get fucked over at the end.
Yeah.
And I had it for a little while, and then there just wasn't much room on the show for it, but I was trying to get it in there, and then eventually they were like, yeah, you can do your segment, but it's gonna be during intermission. And I was like, well, shit. And the guy I was doing my spot with, he called up the guy he was managing on the phone and tried to put up to the microphone. I was like, this is the death of the Sleazy Speakeasy. I don't want my segment anymore. I don't want to go back to the table.
So your Twitter profile picture looks painful.
Yeah, that actually, believe it or not, is the highlight of my wrestling career. If you ask my wife, and my sister and brother-in-law, it was definitely a low point, but it was my first chance to really do something crazy. I've always wanted to push the envelope, but you can't just do it for no reason. And I was able to be in a match with two of my good friends, Brad and Briar Mercury. They're a tag team. They grew up about 45 minutes down the road from me, and once we got connected through Deadly Dale and Otto Bane, two of the guys that trained me, we've been inseparable. So it was the perfect storyline to where I was with my two buddies, and then they were facing Deadly Dale, my trainer, and his father, the Enforcer, the hardcore legend. So his dad is just he was doing hardcore like way back in the day before when people would freak out about barbed wire around here, like it wouldn't be normal, you know. So he's a hardcore legend. So I was going to be in a match with all of my best friends, and then it was going to be a death match. So I was like, man, I really, really got to take it over the limit here. Here's my spot, you know. And what's funny, I was just a valet. I was managing Brad and Briar against Dale and his father. So I had my one spot to really make it count. And then nobody's ever done skewers around here. Around here, you know, we'll do hardcore. There's good hardcore matches, but they're like deathmatch type stuff. There's not so much. So I was like, well, I want the skewers. I'm going to take the skewers, and then I'm going to take the gusset plates. And I had the great idea. I don't think I ever saw someone take gusset plates to the ass before. No. I saw a lot of stuff, and I'm sure it has been done. But me, personally, I never saw it. So I added it all up, and my big spot was the boys were on the outside. You know, they were hurt, and I was trying to take some heat off of them. So I slid in the ring, sleazed ball into the ring, if you will. And then I taunted Dale and then forced her to come into the ring. And I took a Michinoku driver on a chair after that. So the Enforcer always had the best spot growing up, and I loved it. It was nacho cheese. So he'd be in a hardcore match with somebody, right? And someone would scream, nacho cheese! And his eyes would get real big and stuff, and then someone would hand him a popping hot thing of nachos, and he would just smash them in his opponent's face. And man, as a 10-year-old kid, that's about as cool as it gets for me personally. And so I took the Michinoku driver, took the nacho cheese, and they tried to look out for me, but like a dumbass, I had my eyes open. And brother, this was the worst part, nacho cheese under my eyelids.
Yeah, yeah.
Blinded at that point. So then I still had the skewers and gusset plates to go. So he gives me the gusset plates in the arm, which causes blood to run straight down my arm instantly. It was beautiful, beautiful visual. Yeah. So then we had 100-pack of skewers. And before the match, I was like, what do you think? What do you think about half of them, Dale? And he was like, all of them. And I was like, oh, okay. So then he gets me with the skewers, and I think, oh, God, it's all over with. I get to go to the back now, because that was going to put me out of the match. So I started to crawl out of the ring, and he was like, nope, not done yet. And I was like, damn it. I was like, I forgot I got to take this to my ass. So he bends me over like a school kid, and he tries to pull my trunks up, wedgie me. And he actually grabs my tights I have on under my trunks to hold my sack in, rips off, and he thought those were my trunks. He was like, damn it. So he pulled everything else down, just straight ass and balls, and they pounded those gusset plates into my ass cheeks. Blood started flowing, and a long story short, I crawl to the back, bloody, covered nacho cheese, shortly after the show loses a sponsor because of it, and wow. I couldn't have been more proud, my brother.
So, Triple H has been very open about his dislike of hardcore wrestling. He's described promotions like CZW as trash, and in magazines he said that hardcore wrestling's bad for the sport. How do you feel about this?
I mean, I don't blame him, because, like, if you don't like it, you don't like it. There's a lot of guys, a lot of people I could just watch wrestling with, but if I show them some type of Memphis wrestling or some type of Mid-South wrestling, they're not going to like it, because they prefer a faster pace or this or this or that. So I can't really hate on anybody talking down to the style. Because, my boys, Brad and Briar, they're not super into the hardcore themselves. Like, they're cool with it and they're down with it, but, like, there's just either you get it or you don't, I guess. I don't know, but I've watched enough and I've saw enough to understand that you can tell a story just as easily in a deathmatch, hardcore match, as you can in a 15, 20 minute, 30 minute singles match or tag team match or whatever like that. You can tell just as good of a story with the weapons. It's how you create the story. Nobody looks into that. They just, what they see is either spots or matches where they're just going out there to slit each other up, which is totally okay with me. But I just think it is for some, and it's not for some, you know?
I think if it's done well, a good blend of extreme violence and in-ring technical can go together really well. It can be seen as, in some ways, as art.
Absolutely, absolutely. I feel that way. Like with technical, you can do technical all the way, and then you could do extreme all the way. It's all about if you either you're telling a story with a bunch of headlocks or with a submission, or like these guys are telling a story with, oh, well, shit, they got all these dangerous things around them. How would you react in a match like that where that guy is trying to beat you, but you have all these variables around the ring? So it's a different story. In a shoot, it would be have to be treated differently. And the story is endless. That's what's the most beautiful thing about wrestling, man, is you can tell a story in so many different ways. And I think that's why we all love it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so you already answered my next question. It's going to be what's the craziest weapon match you've been involved in. So,
That was it. That was it, man. Around Arkansas and around here in the South, we don't have too many deathmatch tournaments, so I've always had time getting my hands on stuff on it. But the craziest, I refereed a deathmatch tournament this past October. First one been to live or anything, but I got to referee. It was in Memphis, Tennessee. It was Pro Wrestling Trainwreck. It was their first deathmatch tournament. They've been running there and in Indiana some. And it was it was just kind of inconvenient. It was exactly a week before my wedding. So weekend before I got married, I went and refereed a two-day deathmatch tournament, the only two-day deathmatch tournament in 2019. So it was pretty fun. That was the craziest thing I've ever witnessed in my life, being there for that. And these guys are just on a totally another level. As far as I could take myself, these guys in this deathmatch tournament are just a different level, blew my mind. And it was pretty wild trying to be careful throughout all this chaos to not, because my wife was like, you have a single scratch on your face in these wedding pictures. That's way worse than anything that could happen to me in a hardcore match, I'll tell you that.
So some promotions encourage fans to bring weapons to show. Are you ever involved in any of these shows?
There was a lot of those growing up around here, because if the fans can be involved around here in the South, they lose their mind. So it's like fans bring the weapons. They always, you know, you bring the weapons. No guns, no knives. Like that's the big thing. There's always been fans bring the weapons, but around here they're not as creative. Yeah, there's always wild random stuff. Don't get me wrong, I've saw some good stuff, but I've also watched footage of a bunch of fans bring the weapons matches, and I've saw guys create things like, and they might as well be like a sadistic architect the way they create of these weapons. One of the better than a fans bring the weapons match. Whenever I was young, they used to have these strap matches where I don't think there was much more people older than like 16, no adults, but like the kids could pay five extra bucks, stand on the outside of the ring, and it was like a lumberjack match. So they throw a guy out there, and man, you could wear him out as long as you didn't hit him in the face or the nuts or nothing like that. And that was that was the wildest fan interaction thing I've ever saw. I haven't saw it since I was a kid, but they used to let the kids just wear them out. But you know, I would do that too. You split $100, I'd do that.
I went to a show where about 3 years ago, and he hooked up his opponents and just let all the kids chop him. And my son just went as hard as he could on his chest.
That's a lot of trust, man. That's a lot of trust, because those kids could go a lot of ways. Luckily, they're like good wrestling fans, and they know to just chop you. But I've saw that spot a couple of times. I'm like, you got some balls, man.
So is there any weapons you prefer not to be involved in matches in?
Man, this sounds awful. And you can take a little piece of my pride here, I guess. But light tubes, I don't have a problem with them. And I've went through like hundreds of them. But that was whenever I was a teenager. Like whenever I was a teenager doing stunts, we done so many light tube stunts. It was kind of sickening. So now, the last thing I want to do is go through some light tubes, because I'm halfway paranoid about the mercury dust and like it. I don't know. Like I was in a match where there was hundreds of light tubes broken while I was refereeing. I was like, damn, this is a lot of crazy dust up in this mug, you know? And it just, it's not the pain. I'm just weird and paranoid about stuff. Like I won't drink water out of a regular faucet because of the fluoride. It's all because I'm a weird, freaky guy. But light tubes are basically the only line that I have, and I wouldn't have a problem crossing it. So those are the, and they're kind of unpredictable, you could say, but light tubes, I guess. But, you know, that's about it. Other than that, I guess fire is pretty rough. We've done some stuff with fire during the stunts, you know, blowing fireballs and shit like that. But that's about as far. And long dives to the outside or off of something without a good base. That's pretty wild. Yeah. Now a lot of guys are good at doing acrobatic stuff off of high stuff, and it's no big deal. But man, I'm like a piece of lead. So whenever I go flying off something, I'm gonna go straight through it.
If a guy went under the ring and he brought us a bag, would you prefer it to be thumbtacks or Legos?
I would have to go thumbtacks all the way.
Yeah.
thumbtacks all the way. And I've only done what you think of when you think of the Lego thing that gets the reaction. I've just stepped on them around the house. I've never actually been slammed on any. I've saw guys take it. I'm like, well, that's just an awful idea right there. But it's a great spot. But I'd take those thumbtacks all the way.
Yes. All right, so we'll play your song, Wrestling on TV, and then we'll discuss your music.
All right, that sounds good, man.
Smoking weed, drinking beer, wrestling on the TV. Staying up late just watching WWE. It's a work, it's a shoot, you don't know what to do. All you know that's wrestling's in veins. We learned to bump, hit the ropes, stay behind the building, puffing on some dough. With the boys dreaming about being in Maine. Do the job, now your whole body's got a constant throb. But you pay your dues and you better stay in your lane. Promoter man said he'll give you a push on one condition. You feel on his tush. What can I say? If you wanna win, play the game. I'll be smoking weed, drinking beer, wrestling on TV. Staying up late just watching WWE. Now you're not a vet, you're not as green, you lost some water in between, but you're making towns and some people know your name. When a rat pat you on your back on the way to the ring, the beat's not all that bad. So you work a night, have a match on local TV, boy, you're moving fast, but you pay your dues and you better stay. Brothers saying, hey brother, give me another, but it's time, go ahead and lay it in. I'll be smoking weed, drinking beer, wrestling on TV, staying up late just watching WWE. Years, you can't work no more, it brings you to tears. The road was nice, but it sure came with a prize. But you go to shows, try and help out, but some dumbass greenhorns keep running their mouth, calling all their spots, saying now they don't want Stops working in the back of the show. You know his soul is lurking. Here's a 10-bell salute to my brothers that are gone away.
All right, so smoking weed, drinking beers, watching TV reminds me of my 20s.
Oh man, I'm 27, so I'm still in there, pal.
Oh, no, I'm nearly 40. This is early 2000s.
Yeah, well, hey, congratulations, man. You're making it on up there. That's good, brother.
Right, so we've heard two of your songs during the interview. So is this a good representation of what listeners should expect from your music?
Man, truthfully, that's a part of my soul I tried to rip out into a comical pair of songs. You know, it definitely describes me pretty well, but I do a bunch of different type of music. Like, I have some songs about pizza. I have the most popular song I've done.
Pizza song. I love pizza.
Yeah, so
that today.
Yeah, I love pizza like that. I make songs about pizza. I make songs about gratitude and like being depressed and shit. Like, so my music covers a bunch of stuff, but the wrestling stuff is always just really satisfying to get out of me. Because as a wrestling person, like, you just have to, like, you have to get the wrestlingness out of you. Like, either if you're a wrestler or a referee, or you run a podcast, or you shoot video, like, you got to get your wrestling fix out of you. And those wrestling songs get that creative process out of me. And I feel like if it would make me laugh, if I heard it, then it's good. I'm not like a great singer, not a great musician, but like if I listen to a song and it would make me laugh, like that's the type of stuff that I go after.
Cool. So who are some of your biggest influences?
On the rap side, because I do rap music, I do acoustic music. It's all a bunch of weird smorgasbord of stuff. Mm. But on the rap side, growing up, it was 3-6 Mafia out of Memphis. Jelly Roll, some rappers like that. And then, like, I love comedy music, like Dirt Nasty, Simon Rex. He was in one of the Scary Movies. He does a bunch of comedy rap stuff, but it's still cool. Like, he's making fun of himself, but it's still cool. So that, and then, I mean, I'm inspired by all types of music, but the stuff that really, I guess, I kind of learned, like, oh, this is the angle I could go about with music, is from that type of stuff, Dirt Nasty, and then the other types of styles down here in the South with rap music. So if I can either like make you think about something or make you laugh one time, then it's worth it.
Yeah, you've mentioned your rap hip hop style music. I really liked Pumpkin Hill
on YouTube. Thank you. That was that's probably my rap song I'm the most proud of when it comes to just regular lyrics, because it was like I had my own fun little like nudges to the things I like, but I tried to be serious. That was the first song I ever made that I was like, okay, I'm not just going to be really funny during this one.
Yes.
And it made
me
comfortable with letting out and this and that. And then I got the, Sonic Adventure 2, I never played it growing up, but for some reason I downloaded it around that time and played it. And then they had that Pumpkin Hill song, and it was like I played that level so much I was like, I must have been stoned enough to think I could make a song I was like, man, this is gonna be the best song ever. So somehow I found like a some kind of remix of that beat and wrote a song to it.
So do you have an ultimate direction you want to go with your music?
Mainly I just want to always have fun doing it. That's my biggest goal in anything I do, like wrestling or music or video stuff. As long as you're having fun doing it, and as long as it makes you laugh or it makes one of your buddies laugh, that's what we should all be going for. I'm not a great singer, rapper, musician, but it's an outlet, and as long as I can like do it and some people dig it, even if it's the smallest group of people that hear it and be like, oh, I get that reference, or haha, that's funny, that's my main goal. That's the main direction.
So I'll put a link to the Pumpkin Hill video in the description.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a very good video. I recommend everybody goes to listen to it. So where can people find your music?
SoundCloud. The mixtape I dropped was Sleazy's Speakeasy. I grabbed a hold of that, man, and I've been using it ever since. And I plan on using Sleazy's Speakeasy for all kinds of stuff, because I'm not good at thinking of new stuff, but if I have like one good idea, I'm going to run it straight into the ground. Anyways, that's my mixtape, Sleazy Speakeasy. It's on SoundCloud. So if you search Elijah Dobbs, my first and last name, or Sleazy E, I'm sure it'll come up. And then most of my music is on SoundCloud. I have a YouTube page that I had before wrestling, which has music and all kinds of dumb shit on there. It's just Elijah Dobbs, my first and last name. I had also, if you want to go deep into the rabbit hole, if you want to watch my old stunt videos, type in White Picket Videos. So it's like White Picket Fence, but it's just White Picket Videos. And boom, that'll come up. And then my main page, my with all my matches and most of my new stuff, especially my wrestling songs, it's on my Sleazy E wrestling channel. So it's SLEEZY to the E wrestling.
Yeah, I'll put links to all your YouTube channels in the description.
Rock and roll. That's
I was gonna say, do you ever use any of your own music as entrance music when you come to the ring?
Man, I've been asked that a couple of times, and I feel like if I was gonna make a song as my entrance music, man, I better put some stink on it. And yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to like do that, because I feel like it would need to be kind of good. So mainly I use Kid Rock. So I'm from Arkansas, so that's the type of stuff that really works. But no, that would be really cool, and that's definitely an idea that I've thought of.
So have you got any upcoming appearances you want to promote, or has wrestling been banned to Arkansas?
Dude, I wish I did. There's no shows going on. Like, people are out in the liquor stores and in the grocery stores, but we ain't having no wrestling shows. And so no upcoming appearances. This is the main thing, definitely biggest thing I'm doing right now. And I want you to know, man, I really appreciate you having me on here. Very grateful for your time and for the experience. And I just want you to know the gratitude I'm sending your way.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Good deal. Me too.
So before we go, do you want to promote your social media?
Yeah. You can follow me at SleazyE10. So that's SLEEZYE10 numerical. So that's mainly, I don't really have a Facebook, and I just keep the Twitter to try and like grab a hold of this giant internet world that we live in, because I don't really like Facebook, and I try not to get too deep into things. But I use the Twitter. Twitter's the main thing. So if you get a hold of me on there, that's the main thing. But then just my YouTube channel, you got the links down there, and everything's set up for them on a hot platter like the internet wants.
As I said, I'll put all the links in the description below the interview. So I've really enjoyed speaking to you. I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Rock and roll, man. Whatever you need from me, I've had a great time. And you know what? I'd like to hear a little bit more about you and what you're all about sometime. So the sleaze ball is ready for round two whenever you are. Again, I appreciate your time. Very grateful, very thankful. And I hope good things happen in your life, brother. And just keep your positive attitude rolling. And thanks again.